We finally dip our toes into the icy waters of Chinese monster movies this week as we take a look at one of the first to get localization and distribution in English. But will an insistence on asylum-like naming conventions and cheesy action tropes sink or swim this film under a shark-infested avalanche? This is Kaiju vs. History, Snow Monster vs. Ice Shark.
Welcome back to Kaiju vs. History. This is your Brendan Fraser adventuring stand-in, Patrick. And joining me is a fatty with a fun phone ringtone, Miles. Hey, Miles.
What's up, buddy? This was certainly something.
Yeah, and I'm realizing now maybe I have the title wrong. We got to start talking about this title. No, it is just Snow Monster versus
Ice Shark.
Ice Shark singular. For some reason, yeah. I guess I thought it was Ice Sharks. But once again, that's what it would be called if it was an asylum film.
So I definitely, let's go ahead and talk about what's in the title, because I think that title was certainly a localization and I have nothing to base this on. So I'm sure you're going to tell me, but it feels like this movie was meant to be mostly about the snow monster.
There's very little Ice Shark. And you know what, that, you know what I think that is? One of the posters has multiple ice sharks, but there was only the one in the film, right?
No.
A single. Was there multiple ice sharks?
Yeah, because there's that bit towards the end where they drop whatever that electronic device was, and you see a bunch of blood thing pop up. They were being attacked by ice sharks when they were returning from the village.
But when I previewed this movie, I mostly just saw the snow monster in the film. I was like, that's it. That's a kaiju. We're putting this on the podcast. It's done. But I guess I thought it was going to be a little bit more ice shark action. There's really not that much ice shark in the movie, but not enough to have it share the title, which it doesn't in most of the Chinese kind of translations. This movie was called Da Zui Gaiyu, which translates characters out to big snow monster, or, you know, like Yeti, abominable snowman kind of thing. That is their version of it. And that's what the movie is about, really. The entire film takes place for the most part in the, I guess, Himalaya snowy mountain part of China. Although it's a little confusing because it's like right next to it is like a very temperate, if not hot looking temple area in the film. Anyway,
yeah,
that is the main translation. Other translations, like I said, I think just translate out to snow monster. So the only market where the ice shark is added was the English market when this movie came to, I think, streaming services. And I'm pretty sure it was to make it look kind of like an asylum film. And it's like, why would you want to look like that? You know,
the only thing I can think of is because this was never going to get a theatrical release. This was never going to do anything except the VOD direct to video market. I think if they were like, okay, well, we know what sells in that market very well because they keep making movies. Because all they have to do is it was a very cheap localization. Let's just pop this over there with this title and boom, we're good to go. And
it's a little confusing because if you look it up on IMDb, I'm pretty sure it used to be the American versus Ice Shark title. It is just Snow Monster now. Though if you find the DVD, the US release DVD on Amazon, it is Snow Monster versus Ice Shark. That's what's on the posters. So,
well, and some of these movies sometimes make things a little confusing because, you know, we don't have a great database for a lot of the Chinese genre films. In so much as the ones that haven't really been released over here, it's tougher to kind of lock those down sometimes. Mm-hmm. I know there is a Eastern movie called Snow Monster 2. I have no idea if it's related to this one. I don't know. Because there's also a movie that was teased at the end of this one. There's two Chinese monster movies called Snake and Snake 2, which I assume have to be connected because the last sequence we see is a giant snake.
So that's what I thought. I don't No, I mean, it's not the same director.
It's not the same director. It doesn't even look like the same stars. But like the snake looks exactly the same.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been looking into them, and we put our foot down for giant snake movies not being on our kaiju list specifically, whereas I think and this is very good
because most of them are kaiju movies. I mean, they're not yeah. Daikaiju movies. This one is a Daikaiju movie because this is
I would say so. Yeah. And
there's like three of these things.
Let's say, I did scrub through snakes at one point, and it didn't give the vibe of kaiju movie. It gave like an anaconda kind of vibe more than anything. But there are several giant snakes.
Snake 3 is Dinosaur versus Python.
Chinese movies, yeah. But yeah, that is the film basically in a nutshell. Is I would say like 80% the snow monster. There's a little bit of ice shark in it. But it's mostly about this, you know, remote hidden culture of elves, ? They have pointy ears, Miles. Are they supposed to be humans? Or are they kind of like a lost people?
I think they're supposed to be kind of a lost people. I think they're supposed to be kind of like a lost world situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I gotta say it right up front. I was pretty impressed with the production of this movie. I was expecting Asylum level special effects and didn't. I got like 2001 Hollywood special effects, and frankly, that was really impressive.
Yeah, there's some effects that they definitely.
Oh, if someone's shooting at something, you do not see the impact of that bullet at all.
Well, it's like when they're falling through the earth, like when they first get to the underground area, like that is like a TV level kind of like slap together.
Again, still more screen than I expected from, because I mean, I don't have really any basis for a lot of the modern Chinese monster movies. Mm-hmm. And they make quite a few every year. One of the things that we had talked about, and mostly it's partly because, you know, finding these movies is tough in any official capacity. And, you know, it's the ones that do make it here aren't always like Daikaiju films. Like you have stuff like Ninja versus Shark and stuff like that, where you have a giant shark versus a ninja, which is like on paper sounds awesome. That one actually might be Japanese, but there are these kind of, I mean, certainly shark movies are a big thing. We are starting to see, especially after the kind of rebirth in popularity of Godzilla in the sort of mainstream, you are seeing much more of these monster movies. And you and I have kind of talked a bit about them, because I know initially we weren't going to do that many. And then they started getting put on Tubi, which means it doesn't necessarily mean it's an official capacity, because sometimes someone just finds a copy and puts it on there. That's happened before with Japanese and other Eastern films. It certainly happened to One Cut of the Dead with Amazon once upon a time. So it's still kind of iffy on whether or not we're going to do more of these. But if more come out, like, I'm certainly down.
Yeah, I think it's hard because we've done a ton of kaiju like films. I think if they're of good quality and accessible, it's just I'd hate to review films that we have to, like, you know, find in like one sketchy Daily Motion video, and then the episode comes out, it's like deleted, you know, no one can find it.
That is the main issue, is that so few of these have any official capacity. We watched this one because it was on Tubi, so we knew for a fact it had some sort, someone somewhere did something. And that certainly means more than finding it on YouTube, because you can find several of the Chinese monster movies on YouTube, but so few of them have actively made it over here. More of their science fiction and fantasy movies, especially on Netflix, tend to make it over here. I know The Wandering Earth was a big one. And I mean, I'm certainly curious to see more of these. So let's break down what this one is, because this one kind of, I mean, has kind of a standard, you know, we mentioned at the top of the show, kind of mummy-esque sort of vibe to it.
It actually has the same intro as The Meg, which I think is funny, another giant shark movie, because it's like
we still don't know exactly like what the situation was to cause homeboy to retire.
Well, yeah, but it's like your ex-girlfriend or ex-lover or something is trapped in a remote location, and we need you to go and find her. And it's like very much the same situation, where it's like a rich person kind of funding this expedition, and I hate to keep calling him Fatty, but that's what the like guards in the movie called him. It's like the bulk of the Bulk and Skull situation in the film.
And I guess the other star of this film would probably be Di Chen, who plays the aforementioned love interest, who also appears in Snake 4.
I imagine, yeah, there's some actor sharing in this film. Yeah. And oh, boy, did I not copy the cast? The cast did a very good job. And we both watched, like you said, the Tubi version, which had a dub and a really rough dub.
Yeah. I don't watch a lot of dubs in general when it comes to foreign film. Like anime is one thing. I will often watch a dub because all cartoons are dubbed. But when it comes to, like, yes, I grew up watching the Godzilla dubs because that's what we had. These days, I tend to certainly watch the originals when I get to them. Sometimes if it's late at night, I might switch on the English language because my eyes are tired. I know that Netflix still dubs a lot of their foreign shows. I think Marianne and Dark, the two German sci-fi and horror shows, both had a dubbing. I know some of their Spanish shows and films have dubs. I haven't watched, I think the last time I watched a dub was the first 5 minutes of, oh gosh, what was it? Brotherhood of the Wolf. And I immediately switched it because that was the default for the DVD. And I was like, I just heard this awful, like, old man voice, and I switched it to the French. And I was like, ah, yes, that's better. Yeah, we didn't have a choice in the matter with this one.
Well, you can find the company that put this out is called Youku in China. And it's like, you know, a video production. It is very similar to a YouTube kind of thing. But they have put out on their YouTube channel a version of this film. Actually, I think a few versions and some behind the scenes, which I
oh, that's cool.
I looked at. But yeah, this movie came out September 11th, 2019 on Youku. I'll never forget, Miles. And while we watch the Tubi version, I would recommend watching the subtitled original Chinese, because I went and I watched a few minutes of it, and it's very respectful comparatively. Let's put it that way. The dub makes it a more comedic experience. And like I said, probably closer to what you would get with an Asylum production. But yeah, pretty standard Mummy-esque characters. Very similar story to the Meg at first, but then we get plunged into this land of the lost ice field where ice sharks come up from under the snow, and we meet the snow monster, the titular snow monster himself. What are your thoughts on snow monster as a monster?
I thought the monster looked pretty good.
Yeah, right.
Like when I saw the snow monster, I was like, whoa, like, this is pretty impressive. And that's one of the things that I think about this production. Like, I went in expecting kind of almost like an Asylum-esque experience. And obviously with the dubbing, that's going to be the feel anyway, just because it's a pretty awful dub. And I'm sure they just didn't spend a whole lot of money. They probably spent $200 to get everyone to record some lines, and that was it. But outside of that, like, I thought the production values were really, really high. I thought the costuming was solid. The sets were really, really nice.
Yeah,
when they're out in the wilderness, I was like, are they on a stage or do they just, like, go to a mountain?
No,
like,
the practicals in general were just very good.
But I think the snow monster looks pretty great. Very, like, conceptually looks maybe a little bit more like if, you know, like the Yeti kind of looked in terms of, like, just conceptual, like the abominable snowman type of look.
I appreciate it because it wasn't just, I think, what we get, which is white Sasquatch in kind of Western culture.
Had the horns and everything, kind of more of a Chinese.
It had curved horns, one of which was broken off, and then its fingers were kind of like goat's claws more than fingertips. Yeah. So it had some things going for it. And like I said, they in our notes, I have the YouTube video on Youku's channel of the making of it. And obviously it's a full pseudonymated actor within a prosthesis suit, but
it's got some CGI shine to it, but they did a really, really great job making it. One, yeah, the suit looks great, but also with the added CGI, it honestly does look really solid. It makes a great case for, like, hey, you can still do pseudonymation to an effect here. And yeah. I gotta give it to these guys. They did an incredible job with that.
And you get a character out of this monster too. You get, like, a little bit of backstory. You get the relationship with the elf looking people. And I will not lie, the story kind of lost me towards the end when it was like this evil businessman wants to
who's also like genetics. He claims he's not even Chinese. His name's Henry or something.
I was
very confused by all of that.
That being said, the entire movie though is actually kind of good.
Yeah, no, it's extremely entertaining. It's extremely fun. And I mean, yeah, it's a mummy type of adventure. I think the problem is, you know, some of it is very tropey. I mean, they're mm-hmm. copying the, you know, all the greats, like, oh, you can't make a sound here. And what does Fatty do?
his cell phone goes off.
Like, hey, handsome, wake up, or something like that.
Yeah. There's a lot of great action tropes in the film. Oh, what was I just thinking of? Well, gosh, there's a pretty horrific part where, like, I can't call him anything but Fatty, but he's lusting after like the priestess's daughter in the village.
Oh, what was her name? Was it Gigi or something like that?
And they point out that like to suit her,
Kaya is her name.
You have to defeat her in battle. It shows like her main suitor is like missing a ton of fingers.
Yeah, he's missing like all but one.
I was like, what the heck? That's so dark. Yeah, but a rollicking film by comparison to some of the other, I guess, non-Hollywood or Japanese kaiju films.
We were expecting an Asylum level experience and were like insanely shocked that it was like, oh, this is like if Asylum actually gave a crap about the movies they made. Yeah. Like, the thing is like, yeah, because a lot of this is very tropey. It's, you know, paint by numbers, but you have a decent cast, even with the garbage dubbing. Like, they did a good job. And I like the lead actor a lot.
But both the I would say the leads in this film, honestly, if you go back and watch the sub of the film, the even the annoying characters are done much more respectfully, the quote unquote Patty. I do find hilarious, and I think elements of this was also in the subtitle, but in the dub they also like some of the henchmen, they just call like Baldy and number four, number five. It's like, wait, do they have names or don't they? Because like once one of them dies, like they get all serious and it's like, oh, John was like 5 days away from retirement. But yeah, pretty good start. If you're interested, I will snake out, pun intended, more of these Chinese kaiju movies and add them to our list. There's already a couple that we have on there. And part of this was because I think when we started the podcast, and I don't think it's Chinese, I think it's a Thai film called The Lake was not available to us, but it is now. It's a 2022 film.
Mm-hmm. Which is when we knew it was going to get a localization.
Eventually, yeah. And that is very specifically like a giant monster. It is not a like big animal. So I was like, oh, okay. Well, if that does get a version we can watch. And obviously it is now on Tubi. So Tubi, by the way, I think reach out to us, Tubi. Please be a sponsor of our podcast. We are watching every movie that is on your kaiju list.
Well, there's plenty of horror folks that are doing the exact same thing. I can promise you that. Because I watch a lot of my found footage horror on Tubi.
But yeah, if you are interested, Miles, we'll add more to it. This movie did pretty well, I would say. About 5 stars on IMDb, 4.5 stars.
It might have a sequel. We don't know.
2.8 on Letterboxd. No, so Snow Monster 2 has nothing to do with this film, okay. I'm pretty sure. Or at the very least, it's not a kaiju film, I should say. I don't know if it has nothing to do with it, but it is about a 7-foot-tall monster. And okay. I don't think it takes place in the snow, so there's a lot of truth in the advertising of that film. Did you have a favorite moment from this movie, Miles? Something you enjoyed?
I'm trying to think. I mean, obviously that first shot where the ice shark does come out of the water and eat, or out of the ice and eat that guy, it's pretty great because the sharks look fantastic.
Yeah, the shark we didn't really even talk about is its own creature feature design as well, because it's not just like a terrible stock CGI shark that Asylum would have chosen. It's designed to look like, well, it's kind of got like hedgehog-like qualities. It's all spiky on its back and it's great. And you actually get to see all of it, because not only does it jump out the water, the snow monster pulls one out by the tail and starts chomping on it, kills one and starts eating it. I think the scene where the snow monster shows up at like the hilltop that the local peoples have created, and we get like a good size comparison to it, like right at eye level, is one of my favorite parts of the film. And it's also like, oh boy, they're actually doing pretty well with those special effects at the very least. And it is prop that you can get up close with the camera.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of decent work that went into this one. Like we were talking about practical effects, but I liked the way the kind of like insulated village looks. I enjoyed that whole, I really liked that whole sequence where they call out the snow monster and the snow monster comes out and kind of has this moment with our two leads. And then the weird turn happens where it doesn't make any sense anymore. We had a plot reason situation happen, and
the ending is pretty ridiculous.
It is what it is, and I'm kind of curious how much of that was lost in translation. But either way, I did enjoy that sequence. I do think everything about this movie does fit well together. Like, is it the greatest monster movie? Absolutely not. I mean, you know me, I'm not a big ape guy. I'm not a big Sasquatch. I don't mind Sasquatch or Bigfoot, but like, those are my kaiju movies just aren't really my go-to. But this was a really competent monster. This was certainly now a misleading title because he fights the ice sharks like a total of a single time and eats the ice shark and that's it. This is a snow monster movie that happens to have some ice sharks. It would be like if King Kong was like called, you know, Kong versus dinosaur. Yeah. And you have that one sequence, you know.
Oh. Don't give Asylum any ideas, Miles. That's like,
well, they already have what, eight versus monster or eight versus beast or whatever it's called.
Yep, on our list.
So I mean, they already had the idea, but I mean, it's a similar naming convention that like I assume just is something that popped up when they were trying to figure out how to localize it here and slap it on Tubi. And that was what they did, which is honestly, I don't blame them for doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wish we had more of these. You know, this came out in 2019. So it's been about 5-6 years since it released, but the spirit of this hasn't lived on. Cause like we said, there's a bunch of other kind of Chinese giant monster movies, but I don't believe any others by this director who we didn't even mention, Huang He. This movie does exactly what it's supposed to, which is, I think, give you that fun giant monster movie experience. And from China, you know, like for one of the first times. So definitely worth a watch. But let's figure out how worthy of a watch. Talk about our personal enjoyment. I'm at a 7 out of 10 for this. Not only was I so excited to get Sudamation in a new kind of modern kaiju movie, which is a rarity in itself, I was pleasantly surprised how competent, how fun a movie watching experience this was. There's, you know, like little bits of kind of Chinese action movie combat as well, and that's like just sprinkled in. I was like, oh. And yeah, but I will say a lot of my enjoyment did come out of the very bad dub of the film, which felt like this should have a Riff Tracks or a MST3K commentary like immediately. It is a fun film in that aspect as well, but I think you can just enjoy it by itself if you do watch the subtitle version, which, like I said, I'm pretty sure you can just find on YouTube. So yeah, 7 out of 10. What about you, Miles?
I am not quite as like, I had a great time with this. And I was really surprised by the overall quality of the film. And it certainly made me want to check out more Chinese monster movies that have been coming out. And I mean, I would say probably within the last 10 years. I mean, this is around the time we started seeing all these come in. So it's not like, you know, I know there have been plenty, but it feels like the last like decade they've really been pumping these out. So I'm certainly down to watch some more. That said, I mean, this is a very paint by numbers movie. It doesn't help that it has this bad localization. So it's hard for me to kind of even trust, like, is this what happens in the movie? You know, that said, I still had a pretty great time. It's a really competent movie and the monster looks really solid. So I'm giving this a 6, a very enthusiastic 6 out of 10. I think that's really the right place for it.
Yeah, I'm on the same score as my enjoyment for the technical aspect. While it does feel lower budget, I wouldn't say it feels like a low budget film. It feels like a film that is high concept with a modest budget, you know?
Yeah.
It feels like it had a very concrete number for its budget, and it put its money where it should, you know, and maybe didn't hire the most popular Chinese actors for these roles, but got very good actors, but put it into these practical effects, put it into some of the special effects. And a lot of this movie is shot on a green screen, but it doesn't feel like it, you know, like I don't think any of the snow scenes, I don't think were filmed in the actual snow, but it looks like they did, which is pretty amazing.
Well, it's wild to see this wind whipping around, and like these guys are not like in any protective gear whatsoever.
Yeah.
So you're like, all right, like some of you I get, but the guy with the sleeveless outfit on and the scarf, I'm like, you were dying. Whether you know it or not.
Yeah. What about you? Technical aspects? I'm at a 7 out of 10.
I'm honestly right there with you. I think this movie looks really, really solid. It certainly has a crew that knew how to utilize their budget and the effects that they had. Even the green screen stuff looks really solid. It certainly looks better than any Asylum film. And frankly, some of the modest budgets that we get over here in the West, like they did a really, really good job making sure everything kind of looked a little practical. Even the stuff that you can tell was like, you know, blue screening it and doing the old tricks. Like it was fun seeing those old tricks, and they did a really great job with them. It is difficult to write the script because I don't specifically have access to the original language. At least I didn't when I was watching it. And that's okay, because, you know, you can certainly what was going on matched everything. But I do feel like it was a little leaning on the tropey side and not really doing anything as individual outside of the monster itself. Like I would have liked a little bit more insight into either the indigenous people that had the relationship with the monster or the legend of the monster itself. Whether or not that's included in the actual Chinese version of the film, I don't know. But it certainly opened my eyes to like, hey, they are delivering some really high quality, high fun movies. And I got to give credit where credit's due. Like this movie looked great and was a very, very fun time. So at least by the special effects and from what I could tell of the acting like body language and stuff, they did a great job. I was very impressed.
It's another one of those things where, because I was expecting a Monster Island, which I scored pretty low, I was blown out of the waters for the technical aspect. At least I was like, oh wow, there's actually some fun stuff. Yeah, 7 out of 10 is like an interesting execution. I agree with that aspect for the technical aspect. Like I said, the concept, the general idea does nothing really new, except maybe the setting. Like, I don't think we've had like an ice kaiju really before. As far as its importance as a kaiju movie, you know, this is probably the most kaiju of the kaiju likes. I feel like if this monster did come back to mainland China and we got to see it stomping around a city, it'd probably be 100% a kaiju film, but the main focus does seem to be on like their adventure in this area, and you get the kaiju book ending the film, and then right there in the middle, big monster attack. But it feels like an action adventure movie more, kind of first foremost.
Yes,
but yeah, the addition of the kaiju, I'm not unhappy about. I don't hate the ice shark in this film. So
no, the ice shark was good. I wish there was more of it.
Yeah. I feel like it would have been, though, probably just as good a movie without the ice shark. So it's like, you know, it's the same thing with, like you said, King Kong and the T-Rex. It's like, yes, T-Rex is a very fun fight, but it's a King Kong movie. So I kind of wish we, like you said, had more of the snow monster. I'm giving a 6 out of 10 for its importance. I think this hopefully leads to more similar, pseudomated, original concept kaiju from China that we can look at in the future, and they don't spend as much time with the localization. You know, like I said, I think this took a couple of years for us to get a good access to it, get to see it on Tubi. So, oh, what about you, Miles? Where do you rank this one?
So I am going a little bit lower just because, you know, this is kind of a basic you know, action adventure movie that happens to have a monster in it. It's certainly a more kaiju like and not a daikaiju movie, but also, and this also kind of comes into, like, I don't know a ton of Chinese monster movie history. And so it's hard for me to rank, you know, obviously we haven't covered a lot of other Chinese monster movies outside of a couple of stuff from, I think, from the '70s that we did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There just have not been that many. And I was looking to see if there were more that we missed or just weren't, like, translated, and there really wasn't that many.
Oh, and it's tough to, like I said, that we don't really have a reliable database of a lot of the Chinese stuff, unfortunately.
Oh boy. Researching this movie on Chinese websites was very difficult. I was trying to get more information while we were recording, and like Google Translate was not working for me. I was like, oh man.
Yeah, it's a little tougher with that. That said, like, I don't want to definitely penalize the movie, but I gotta this is a competent movie. If it came in conversation, I'd be like, yeah, you should check it out. Like, just keep your expectations lower. But as a Saturday afternoon movie, it's pretty fun. So I'm giving it a 5 out of 10 for its, you know, evocative nature, because it doesn't really feel like a daikaiju movie. It's certainly more mummy-esque, but it is a very fun movie. And, you know, I've certainly graded some kaiju-like movies on par with kaiju movies. But
yeah,
this isn't really informed by a lot of the kaiju cinema or even monster movie cinema. This is more of your pulp fantasy stuff, your mummies, your Indiana Joneses, your, you know, Doc Samson's Phantom kind of stuff. Like, it's more in that line of things than it really is or even like your Uncharted. You know, this is more like that than it is a kaiju film. So I'm giving it a 5 out of 10, but it's certainly not because it's bad. But I just want to say, for its evocative nature as a kaiju film, I do have to be, you know, pretty strict on that here. Mm-hmm. But it still, if it came up in conversation, I would recommend it to folks.
Yeah, it's in that same category as like The Meg, and it has a lot of similarities to The Meg that came out, what, a year before?
Yeah.
And I mean, I like both. I think both are good kaiju likes. That brings your final score to a 6 out of 10. I'm at a 6.6, round up to a 7. And our podcast final, a 6 out of 10, which, is I guess as good as I could have hoped for this film. I didn't expect to enjoy it as much, but I did.
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel the same way.
Wow. Yeah. So yeah, maybe we'll add some more. If you're listening to this and you know more Chinese kaiju films that have come out in the last 5 years or so, let us know. And where can folks let us know, Miles? Where can they find us online?
You can email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Blue Sky at Kaiju vs. History. Go to our website, kaijuversushistory.com. Please rate and review our show, comment, share with your friends, let us know what you think. Check out our Letterboxd account, Kaiju vs. History, to see all our reviews and watch our list of films. And if you want to talk to Patrick and I in real time about any monster movie you want or other nerdy things, you can go to cosmiccrit.com. That's our sister podcast. And we have a Discord, which has a Kaiju versus History channel that you can talk to us in real time any day where we are bored at work. Patrick, what are we doing next week?
Oh, well, I just wanted to mention, I was so busy this last weekend, I didn't notice we had some comments on our Blue Sky. So thank you for chatting us up there. Our longtime listener friend Jared did want to talk about the subtitle for the next Godzilla X Kong. We talked about that last week a little bit, the Supernova title. Gotta be an alien, Jared.
Even the title Supernova, okay, well, that means it's extraplanetary, so I'm assuming something with space. Is it the most evocative title? No, but I think they're going for a big blockbuster title, so I'm okay with that. I do think it's going to be space related. I am kind of hoping that Gigan is part of it, but I don't think that should be the main monster.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, I'm hoping that there is some sort of like zillion type of thing. I mean, they've done the Hollow Earth stuff. Let's kind of leave that for now and kind of leave it to Monarch to kind of explore. And let's look to the sky. Let's get weird. I would say one classic Toho monster, like a Gigan, or even, I don't want Space Godzilla, but something else.
Yeah.
And one new original monster.
Yeah, or make a new classic monster. Give us Space Ghidorah or something to that effect. You know,
I'll take I'm even good that. Not using Ghidorah again. I think.
Yeah.
I think we need something we haven't seen before in $200 million.
And then we'll have to just answer this online. But a new follower and or listener, Matthew on Blue Sky, also asked if we had a master list of the books that we mention on our excellent podcast. And they've picked up a few to read and want to keep diving into kaiju movie history. We have several, and we hope that you've picked up Grant's Godzilla history book. But there's a few that are kind of like out of print. Miles is holding the Ishiro Honda biography, which made me cry in part. It's so good.
Yeah, it's a top tier biography. It's not all Godzilla related, which is what makes it so good.
Less than half, I would say, is about those parts.
Well, because it makes me want to watch his other films, like his non-science fiction films. I will say it was nearby. If you can locate a paperback copy of Godzilla 2000 by Mike Shazani, I believe that's how it's pronounced. Mark, M-A-R-C. There's a whole series of books around the time that the new movie was coming out, and we were kind of going towards the new millennium. And there was I think three or four, because I think it was The Return of Godzilla, Godzilla 2000, and then there was two others. One didn't ever get published. But Godzilla 2000 is a very fun, I mean, I haven't read since like middle or high school, but like, I'm about to reread it now, but it's a very, very fun Godzilla. If you want something classic style Godzilla, Patrick, you know, you're a big fan of the Nemesis series.
Yeah, of course. Our good friend, Jeremy Robinson, those books are very fun if you're looking for fiction. I think this comment is mostly about
nonfiction
kaiju history. So the two books that we've mentioned before on the podcast are two sections of the same book by LeMay, The Big Book of Japanese Monster Movies, and one is Showa era, so 54 to 89, and the other is 89 onwards.
So there's another one. The Big Book of Japanese Monster Movies. No, in that series, the Big Book of Japanese Giant Monster Movies, The Lost Films, which is infinitely more fascinating because you get to see all of the films that we never got made, including the Batman Meets Godzilla that was supposed to have the Adam West Batman meet Godzilla. And it was supposed to be basically Batman the Movie 2. It was supposed to be the second, I think we've talked about on this show, but that book is a great resource. I know there's a newly revised edition that came out a year or so ago. I think I have the original 17 release, but there, if you're looking for nonfiction books, I think that the ones that Patrick were listing are also pretty great.
They are great. It was printed, I think, right after Godzilla King of the Monsters, because it does go up to 2019, this last big book of Japanese giant monster movies. But it was limited to what they had access to, and I don't think they had brought over something like Snow Monster. So Snow Monster is not in the book, but just about everything else we've covered on the podcast is, and some things that we haven't, like Ultraman movies, the 2017 Power Ranger movie, kind of in the realm of kaiju. So I recommend these books if you're wanting to just dig into the history themselves. They've helped inform the podcast, even though we do a lot of our research online. But yeah, thank you for reaching out. Thank you for listening on whatever platform you listen on, and join us on Blue Sky. I'll try to respond to these comments and put all this in type form.
Yeah, I do have to say, I know that they recently kind of split the Lost Films into three books. The original version was split into three parts. I think they've kind of expanded each era and are selling it that way. They're only about $20 a pop, but if you love like diving into the realm of like, what if, I can't recommend those enough. It gets your imagination going.
And while we brought it up to talk about next week's episode, I'll read the final word from LeMay on the next movie, which is, if you like offbeat films like Monster X Strikes Back or Big Man Japan, you might enjoy this movie. We're returning to Japan next week, Miles, for a new indie director who's going to ride the wave of the kind of current kaiju film resurgence. Tune in next time for History versus Attack of the Giant Teacher.